All right, John, the seventh chapter. John chapter 7. And down at about verse 14, I think we actually left off at 15. But at verse 14, we find now, remember the situation here. Jesus he has been in Galilee doing his ministry for a good while. Really for the past 6 months, he's been working in Galilee, performing miracles and teaching people in the synagogue and doing that sort of stuff. So now the Feast of Tabernacles is here, has arrived, and his brothers, who at this point don't believe in him, they're trying to get him to go to Jerusalem. You recall the beginning of chapter 7. And they reason, well, you've done all of this good work in Galilee and some of these obscure places, so why not go to the heart of Judaism? Why not go to where all the leaders are? Why not go to Jerusalem and do the same kind of work there, perform some of the same kind of miracles and teach the things that you've been teaching? And really, they were kind of egging him on to do that because, again, they didn't really believe in him. And so he says, no, you go. It wasn't his time to go, and so he waits. But now at verse 14, we learn that at the middle of the feast, these feasts usually lasted 8 days, seven technically, but they really added a day to that. They lasted about 8 days, and so it would be about the fourth day of the feast. But verse 14 says, the middle of the feast, Jesus went up in the temple, and he began teaching. And so we left off at verse 15. You remember that it says, the Jews therefore marveled, saying, how is it that this man has learning when he has never studied? And I think I closed last week talking about the fact that particularly this word marvel, usually, or at least often, it carries with it the idea of admiration. But here it carries the idea of being puzzled, being surprised. And there's a lot of places where this word is used like that. In Luke chapter 1, I think about verse 21 is one example of that. I think it's in the ESV translated wondered. But anyway, it had to do with Zechariah, the father of John the Baptist, before, of course, John was born. You remember he had to go into the temple, offer incense. It was just his allotment at that particular time, being a priest. And it was there when the angel appeared to him in there. And so he prolonged his time in there. And all the priests on the outside, they were wondering, where in the world is, what's Zechariah doing in there? I mean, they go in there every day and do that, a different priest all the time. And he was in there for quite a long time. And so they wondered at that. And the point is, they were puzzled by that. What in the world could keep him in there? Why isn't he coming out of there? But the point is, that word is used like that. There's evidence throughout the New Testament. Sometimes it has to do not with admiration, but just being puzzled, being surprised. And that's how this word is being used here in John chapter 7 at verse 15. They're not admiring Jesus because of his teaching. As I said before, really, they have contempt towards Jesus and the nerve that he has even to teach openly and publicly the way that he's doing, being nobody but Joseph's boy. You know, he's just Mary's son. Who gives him the right to teach in the way that he's teaching? But they were shocked. They were puzzled that he knew what he did. It says they marveled, saying, how is it that this man has learning when he has never studied? He hadn't attended the rabbinical schools of that day. And that was huge for someone to know what he knew. People, teachers, even today in the church, people who teach and preach know things, and often preachers might have a wider range of knowledge. And I hope that doesn't sound self-serving or complimentary or anything, but I'm just making the point. As preachers study for a living, so we have opportunity to read and study a lot more things and spend a lot more time and that sort of thing. But it's not unusual at all in a congregation like this. For some of you, you might know as much as I do on particular things. For example, when I was in a gospel meeting here not too long ago, there was a young fella, I believe he was still in high school. And it was clear that he, for whatever reason, he really was taken by the book of Revelation, of all books. But, you know, I had a few, during the course of the week, I had two or three conversations with him, and he knew the book of Revelation. He's asking me questions. I felt like I ought to be asking you some questions. And if either he was just out of high school or still in high school. And that's not unusual at all in churches of Christ. Because why? You have access to the same material that I have. Only difference between you and me or any other preacher is we have opportunity to spend more time and perhaps therefore study a wider range of things and have to by nature study a wider range of things. So we may have a broader knowledge, but you have access to the same material that I have access to, generally speaking. Well, back in Jesus' day, it wasn't like that. People had, they had, of course, the Old Testament scriptures, but it wasn't as readily available to everyone like the Bible is to all Christians today. The average Jew could have some access. I don't know exactly the extent of that, what that would be, but they would have some access to the scriptures, but certainly nothing like what we have today. But then you had the rabbinical teachings that you learned in schools, those who went to those schools. And what was taught in those schools by the rabbis, first of all, the scriptures obviously would be taught. And so the priest and the Pharisees or whoever, you know, the lawyers, scribes, they would all have a good knowledge of the scriptures, in theory at least. What we're even discovering going through the book of John is that a lot of those Jewish authorities misunderstood their own scriptures. So, but in theory, they were supposed to be experts in the law in all of that. And they were, pretty much. But then they also had what were called the tradition of the elders that were passed along from generation to generation. These teachings of the elders of old, they would be taught to the rabbi and then to the next generation of rabbis and then to the students of these rabbis. They would have that teaching. It would later, in the 3rd century AD, they were put down in writing. It was called the Talmud. And so now they're in writing. But all until the 3rd century, all that stuff wasn't really even written down. They were just the oral teachings of the elders, the traditions of the elders. And who would have access to that to that teaching? It would be those who attended these schools. It would be the rabbis and their students and people like Paul who sat at the feet of Gamaliel and had access to all that stuff. But the average person, the average Jew, wouldn't have any access to that. Wouldn't really know unless, you know, maybe they had a rabbi who was a cousin or whatever and teach them some. But generally speaking, you really wouldn't have access to that. Now, here's the point of all of that. Jesus had all of that stuff down pat. He was obviously an expert in the law. I mean, he could quote the law left and right because, after all, he was the Son of God. And he proved again and again. Where was he found at the age of 12? He was in the temple. Remember who he was teaching? The so-called doctors and lawyers, so-called experts. He was at 12, he was teaching them. So he had that down pat. But the surprising thing is he knew about all of these. This word learning here would encompass here at verse 15 where it said, how does this man has learning which he has never studied? He hadn't been to those schools where you would learn not only about the scriptures, but about all of these traditions of the elders and that sort of thing. He had all of that down pat. He knew all that. Now, you know, they were shocked at that. They marveled. They were puzzled. How is that even possible? Because we know who this man is. This, again, is Joseph's boy. This is Mary's son. He hasn't attended any schooling. He hasn't sat at the feet of any of the rabbis. How does he know this stuff? And they marvel at that. And again, they had some contempt about it, that he even had the nerve. Really, technically, only the rabbis were the ones who were supposed to be doing the teaching publicly, particularly. But here's an unlearned man doing that. What passage, by the way, with regard to the apostles, does this remind you of any situation? What about Acts chapter 4? Who showed some boldness and courage in Acts chapter 4, and they marveled, the men of the Sanhedrin, they marveled at the fact that they were so bold, but they were unlearned and ignorant men. Peter and John. And they stood before the Sanhedrin, some of the same Jews that dealt with Jesus, but the leaders, and they, you know, they first thing they thought of, look, these individuals, they're awful courageous, standing before all the Jews and even before the Sanhedrin and boldly preaching, and they're unlearned and ignorant men. So the Jews, not unlike a lot of people today, put a lot of emphasis so far as those who have authority and those you ought to listen to with those who attended the universities, those who sat at the feet of the most important teachers. But Jesus did none of that, and yet he knew what he knew. He was an expert, and he taught with authority. He taught with more authority even than their scribes and Pharisees. Now why? Look at verse 16. So Jesus answered them, "My teaching is not mine." In other words, he was not. What they would conclude is, well, if he hasn't been taught in any of our schools, if he hasn't attended any of these rabbinical schools and sat at the feet of any of these great teachers, he must have taught himself. He must be self-taught. Jesus said, no, I'm not self-taught. Now, we understand, of course, Jesus is God. He was always God, will always be God. But let's not forget, you should never forget that Jesus, in God's scheme of things, that when he came down here to earth, he entered a role, and it was a role that was submissive to the Father. And so he was always obedient to the Father, and even in his personal ministry, the things that he did by the authority of the Father, even his teaching. God even gave him the words to speak during his personal ministry. And so he begins to emphasize that at verse 16. He says, no, my teaching is not mine, but his who sent me. And that's a regular theme, really, throughout the Gospels. Jesus mentions that a lot. Turn over to John chapter 12. You remember this in John the 12th chapter. And at verse 48, a pretty familiar passage. John chapter 12 and at verse 48. Jesus says, the one who rejects me and does not receive my words has a judge. The word that I have spoken will judge him on the last day. For I have not spoken on my own authority. Now, I mean, all of that is very interesting, really. And I don't, you know, we don't want to get into too deep of a conversation about the Godhead and all of that. It is pretty deep stuff. And again, as I said a moment ago, Jesus was God and always was God, always will be God. But again, in a submissive role, he acted always under the authority of the Father, even with regard to what he spoke. And you don't have to take my word for that. That's what Jesus says right here. For I have not spoken on my own authority, but the Father who sent me. Well, look back over there in John chapter 7 at verse 15 or 16. What is he talking about? My teaching is not mine, but his who sent me. But finishing this in John 12, he's saying, my words, again, they're not my own. They come from the one who has sent me. He says at verse, he goes on to say, for who sent me, he has himself given me a commandment, what I should say and what I should speak. And that's just typical. Look over in John chapter 17 and this the familiar prayer that Jesus prayed, you remember. John 17 at verse 8, part of that prayer, he says, for I have given them, that would be the apostles, I have given them the words that you gave me. See that? That's the way it worked within the Godhead. That's the way God communicated through his Son, gave his words to his Son. Who did his Son give them to? To the apostles. The apostles then, by inspiration, did some preaching, did some writing, wrote them down. Now we have them in this book we call the Bible. but it's God communicating to his son, and then his son giving those words to the apostles. But the point of it is, God gave the words to his son. So over here in John chapter 7, then, he's saying, these people are just, they're amazed. How in the world does he do all this teaching? How does he know so much? He must have taught himself, because he certainly didn't attend the universities of our day. No, Jesus says, I'm not self-taught. These aren't my words at all. They come from the Father. They come from the one who has sent me. Now he goes on to say, verse 17, if anyone's will is to do God's will, he will know whether the teaching is from God or whether I am speaking on my own authority. So now Jesus begins to give us some clues as how in the world do you tell if a person is really speaking for God? And we have to be very careful in passages like this. This is not something that is universally applicable. Particularly as you just read that again, verse 17. If anyone's will is to do God's will, he will know whether the teaching is from God. Now, do you think that's universally applicable for all time? That every person in the world who has a desire, that's what the word will there means, who has a desire to do God's will understand whether a teaching is from God or not. In your own experience, is that always true? No. That's not always true, is it? Why? Because this same Bible talks about the fact that there's false teachers in the world, and there's false doctrine in the world. And sometimes people are very honest and very sincere, but their mind has been poisoned, confused by some kind of false teaching. So they may hear the truth, and they may in their heart want to do God's will, but they don't recognize it as such because of some false teaching that they have come under the influence of. I can't count how many times I have taught on the subject of something like baptism. And people who I know are sincere and want to do what's right, but don't accept what the Bible says about baptism. The majority of people in the religious world probably would not. Because baptism is a what to them? It's a work. And we're not saved by works. There's nothing for you to do in order to be saved. And so you can present them with passages like Philippians 2 at verse 12, work out your own salvation. So there is something for man to do. That's the point. But there are some very honest people who you present them with that and many other passages and try to reason with them. And they want to do God's will, but they don't understand God's truth. That happens all the time. So what Jesus is dealing with here is if you go to someone and that person hasn't been predisposed to some kind of false doctrine that is going to confuse them on that particular subject that you're dealing with. And that person, you couple that with the fact that that person really, really wants to do God's will. Well, when that person is presented with truth, they'll be able to recognize that. But now there are, again, as I've been trying to explain, there are some variables that might stop that process. But if those variables aren't there, then that person who is sincere and who really wants to do God's word and his mind or her mind hadn't been poisoned and he or she gets the truth, hears the truth, well, they'll understand. Yes, that's right. See. Now, all of this says a couple of things. Jesus is really, at least mildly, saying something that would hurt these Jewish listeners here. Because Jesus is delivering God's truth. That's the point of it all. My teaching is not mine, but it comes from the one who sent me. But are these Jews that he's dealing with, the majority of these Jews, are they recognizing it as truth? No. So that says one or two things. It says either, number one, their true desire is not to do God's will. And that was the fact with these Jews. They had another agenda. They weren't obsessed with doing God's will. They weren't all about doing God's will. Jesus was. He said, my meat is to do the will of him that sent me, to do the will of my Father. That was what Jesus was all about, doing God's will. He would put his Father's will over his own. Not my will be done, he later on said, but thy will be done. So he was all about that. These Jews were not. Plus, their minds had been a little poisoned by the tradition of the elders and that sort of thing. And so when Jesus, using the kind of language that he's using here, would really cut them a little bit. Because he's implying here, if you really desire to do God's will, you would understand that my teaching comes from God, from the one who sent me. And the fact that they didn't accept him says, well, that's because, again, they have a different agenda. And so, but the principle is there, and there is some, as we just read that statement, we have to make sure that we don't take that too far and out of the context in which Jesus is saying it. It is possible for someone who wants to know God's will to not really see it when it's presented to them if some other variables are involved. But that would cut them. This would cut them. And then he gives them another way that they could tell. Verse 18, he says, the one who speaks on his own authority seeks his own glory. But the one who seeks the glory of him who sent him is true. And in him there is no falsehood. Now again, that's a general truth there. That you just think about the first part of that. The one who speaks on his own authority seeks his own glory. Isn't that usually the case? I mean, even if you just broaden that even than what Jesus is talking about, you just take all false teachers. The one who is teaching some doctrine that it really is not from God, and again, his highest agenda is not to do the will of God, that false teacher, ultimately, his teaching will elevate him and will be about him and somehow, some way, will bring glory to him. You get someone out here who's teaching something and it doesn't do anything for self at all. It is all about the one that he's teaching about. And that gives you an idea. Well, he's not trying to elevate himself. He's not emphasizing himself. He's not trying to receive the praise of men or anything like that. He's probably teaching the truth. And that was Jesus. You go to what we have studied so far in the book of John and all through the Gospels and all of his teaching was never meant just to exalt himself. In fact, in the very last chapter, you remember that the Jews, after he did some things, they tried to take him and force him to be king. And, you know, it's not time for that. And so Jesus wasn't about serving himself. And so that even today can be a clue to when a teacher gets up, if you ever have a teacher or a preacher and his doctrine's all about him, he's always talking about himself and it's always self-elevation and what he can get and this and that. Well, certainly a flag should go up. What's he about? So that's just another way of telling. These Jews should know. All of this is applicable to Jesus, should give these Jews a clue that yes, his teaching didn't originate with him. He's not teaching of his own authority, but it does come from the Father. And then verse 19, he says, has not Moses given you the law? Yet none of you keeps the law. Why do you seek to kill me? And so in all of these verses, he's really kind of taking shots at these Jews here, and rightfully so. They deserve it. They're hypocritical, even in how they're treating Jesus here. Has not Moses given you the law? And of course, the Jews rested in the law, didn't they? They took a lot of pride in the fact that they had the law, that they knew the law, as opposed to the Gentiles. Remember over in Romans chapter 2, what Paul wrote just in general about the Jews, Romans the second chapter. And at verse 17, he says, but if you call yourself a Jew and rely on the law and boast in God and know his will and approve what is excellent because you are instructed from the law And if you are sure that you yourself are a guide to the blind, a light to those who are in darkness, and an instructor of the foolish, a teacher of children, having the law and the embodiment of knowledge and truth. And he goes on there, but that, you know, he described the Jew, pretty much, that's how the Jew felt. Paul's saying, if all this is true, of course, he goes on to say, then why aren't you keeping the law if this is the case? But the Jew boasted in the law. We have the law. We're guides of the blind, all of that. And so, but now Jesus here, as he talks to these Jews at verse 19, he says, has not Moses given you the law? Yet, he says, none of you keeps the law. Which really, if we kept on reading in Romans chapter 2, we'd find that that was an ongoing problem with the Jews. In fact, that was the primary problem with the Pharisees, wasn't it? Look over it at Matthew chapter 23. You'll remember, I think, these words, Matthew chapter 23, and at verse 1. It says, and then Jesus said to the crowds and to his disciples, the scribes and Pharisees sit on Moses' seat. So do and observe whatever they tell you, but not the works they do. Why? For they preach, but do not practice. Well, that kind of puts you in mind of Romans chapter 2. And it certainly puts you in mind of what Jesus is talking about in John chapter 7 with these Jews. And this was a major problem. Is this something that is reserved just for the people of God back there in the Old Testament? You mean there's some people in the church today that preach and don't practice? Every once in a while, you might find someone like that. It's hypocritical living. And we have to be very careful about that. One of the things that we want to be sure, not just preachers who get up and preach and teachers who go in the classroom and teach, but every one of us is Christian. Listen, all of us are to be teachers. You're to be teaching your friends and family members and co-workers and those that you associate with about Jesus and about the gospel. We should be all about saving souls. But if you preach, you better practice. Because, oh, you all are like the Pharisees. You all are legalists, and you claim you got to do this and you got to do that. Well, the Bible says we have to do it, we have to do it. But does that make us like the Pharisees? No, the Pharisees. Jesus never condemned the Pharisees for doing. In fact, right here in Matthew chapter 23, again, as he talks to his disciples, what does he say in verse 3? So do and observe whatever they tell you. Isn't that something? Jesus didn't come around and say, you know those Pharisees, you got to watch out for those bunch of legalists. Because they think you have to do something in order to be saved. Jesus never said that to his disciples. He said to his disciples, you observe what they do. Whatever they tell you to do, you observe that. Because they were telling them to do the law, to keep the law. And God has always demanded that his people keep his law. But his warning is, don't do like they do. You do what they teach, but don't do what they do, because they preach and they don't practice. And every one of us, as members of the body of Christ, we better make sure that we don't fall into that category. Before you teach your friends, your neighbors, your co-workers, your family, you make sure you're practicing whatever it is that you plan to preach. That's very important. Nothing hurts the cause of Christ more than hypocritical living. That turns people away very quickly. And so people, my experience is people don't mind. Sometimes you get tough with people. You tell them the way things are, and sometimes they'll respect that. Some people will be offended. Some people will turn away. But some will respect that you care for them enough to tell them the truth. But they find out you're not living the truth yourself. Well, that's the end of that. Not too many people can stomach the hypocrite. So we have to be careful about that. Just make sure you practice what you preach. Well, turn back over here to John chapter 7, and we find this is what the Jews were not doing. He says in verse 19 again, has not Moses given you the law? Yet none of you keeps the law. You say, well, now right away, what they turn around, and the Jews again, they had a lot of pride, and they would brag about keeping the law. So they right away, they're not going to say, oh, we're not keeping the law. They turn around and say, well, we are too keeping the law. So Jesus gives them some evidence that they're not keeping the law. He says, why do you seek to kill me? Now, what had Jesus done that was worthy of death? Absolutely nothing. And yet the Jews, they're trying to kill. In fact, you remember back, I think it is in the beginning of chapter 7. It says in after verse 1, after this, Jesus went about in Galilee and he would not go about in Judea because the Jews were seeking to kill him. And so here they are. They want to kill Jesus. They can't stand Jesus. And as a result of their contempt, they want to kill him. Let me tell you something. You want to kill somebody, there's a lot of hatred there, isn't there? And that doesn't say a whole lot about you and the condition of your heart. If you have in your mind, I want to kill somebody, well, that's not good. They want to kill Jesus. They have a hearts full of contempt. And so now Jesus, of course, he knows what's on the heart of men. He knows that they're after. He knows what they want to do. And so now he's pointed this out as a point of hypocrisy with them. Because after all, they're to keep the law. What did the law of Moses say? Thou shalt not kill. And so he's just bringing all of this out. He's pointing out their hypocrisy. You're seeking to kill me. Now, the crowd, of course, answers, you have a demon who is seeking to kill you. They're accusing him of being paranoid. Who is it that's trying to kill you? Now, what that tells us is, were the Jews trying to kill him? The leaders. Remember what we have said about the term Jew throughout the teaching of John? That generally, this may not be true every single time, but generally, when the Jews are referenced, it's referring to the leaders, as opposed to the crowd. Sometimes the term just people, the people will be used. But when it refers to the Jews, it's usually talking about the Jewish leaders. And so the people, all the people here who are now here listening to Jesus teach, they're not all aware of the plot to kill Jesus. So Jesus, you know, he's preaching now, and he talks about, well, you're seeking to kill me, and someone's thinking, who's this? This guy's a nut. He's full of, he's paranoid. You know, there's some people like that in the world. Someone's always out, always looking around and thinking someone's out to get you. And that's what the crowd honestly thinks. Who's trying to kill you? Well, he brings up a situation that you'll remember. At verse 21, Jesus answered, I did one work and you all marveled at it. Now, what was the one work that he did? He obviously did a lot of work, but so he has something on his mind. You remember what it was? That's exactly right. He's referring to the time at the pool of Bethesda when he healed that man. He'd been crippled for 38 years. Now, you might remember, what did he tell that man to do? Rise and walk. And what was he laying on before he was healed? His portable pallet. He told him, take that up and walk. Now, what did the Jews think he was doing? He was working on the Sabbath. you're walking around with this portable pallet. That's hard labor. You violated the Sabbath. And the one who has healed you has violated the Sabbath because he worked on the Sabbath too. And at that time, they started to seek to kill Jesus because he had violated the Sabbath. That's not the first time. Way back in chapter 5, you remember that the Jews, that's where it really all came out. And they accused him of that. But anyway, that's what he has on his mind here. The healing of a person on the Sabbath. Now, that really, I think we talked about it back then. That wasn't a violation of any Sabbath law. Even picking up a portable bed and carrying it wasn't a violation of the law, what the law really meant by working on the Sabbath. But the Jews were inconsistent with, with that application of that. And so he now, we'll have to get to this next week, but he now begins to emphasize some of that. He says, Moses gave you circumcision. Not that it is from Moses, but from the fathers. And you circumcised a man on the Sabbath. Now, see, the Jew would do that. The Jews thought that was all right. That was later on in the Talmud. They had many pages on that, when it was okay to do things on the Sabbath. And one thing the Jews can do on the Sabbath, they could circumcise. If a child, when was a child circumcised, you remember? On the eighth day. Now, if that eighth day happened to fall on the Sabbath, the Jews believe you can go ahead and circumcise that child, even though it's the Sabbath. So you can, figuratively, cleanse that baby boy through by way of circumcising him. You could do that. See, they thought that was okay. But for Jesus to make a man whole, to cleanse a man perfectly on the Sabbath, they said, oh, that's a violation of the Sabbath. And you see an inconsistency there. One of the things that the Jews forgot, or often forgot, is that Jesus, I think, in Mark 2, verse 7, pointed this out, that the Sabbath was made for man, not the other way around. So there are a lot of times when there was a law that had to do with an individual's own welfare, that rose above the Sabbath. Because the Sabbath law, in the very first place, was meant to help man. It was made, created for man, not man for the Sabbath. And the Jews recognized that, and that's why they had no problems with circumcising a child on the Sabbath. Not only that, there are other passages like Matthew chapter 12. They believe that if you had an ox or something fall into the ditch on the Sabbath, guess what they could do? Now, how much work would that take? You think pulling an ox out of a ditch would be easier than picking up a portable pallet and walking with it? But they believed you could pull the ox out of the ditch. And Matthew chapter 12, Jesus called them on that, showed their hypocrisy on that. But the only thing he's pointing out here, you're inconsistent. And because of your inconsistency and really your hypocrisy and how you're setting forth this law, you're seeking to kill me. Something that Moses told you not to do. So they're not keeping the very law that they claimed to be so jealous for in the first place. So we'll pick up there then. What verse is that? 22. So we'll pick up there then on next week. Thank you for your attention.